Hi everyone, and welcome back to the 51st video for the Old Testament Survey course. In this section, we'll finish up the Minor Prophets by examining the book of Malachi. And let's start with the standard background issues. The author is Malachi, and nothing else is known about him except for this book. And we're actually not even sure of his name. You see, the word Malachi means my messenger. So it could be his proper name, but it could also be a title. And the date of this book is around the time of Ezra's reform. That is probably about two generations after the return, when people were struggling to stay faithful to the Lord. And Malachi has a similar message to Ezra in his reforms. Ezra called for reform to live rightly in light of God, and so does Malachi. Malachi addresses a number of issues of faithfulness. Now, let's look at the organization of Malachi. The outline of Malachi is built around a series of disputations. Now, a disputation is like a debate or an argument, but in this case, it's extremely one-sided. See, God's people made a series of complaints or arguments against God. And God responds to each one, first acknowledging their argument, and then showing how they are wrong and correcting them. Like I said, it's one-sided because God is God, and He is right. And the disputations are about God's love for Israel, even though they complain that they don't feel loved in their struggle in that particular point in history. But God's love for them is shown in his choosing Jacob over Esau and the way that God has treated them compared to his rejection of Edom. And then Israel is rebuked for offering lower quality offerings. God deserves their best, and they're dishonoring him by giving him only what they don't want. And then unfaithful priests are rebuked because their instruction is false and it's harming the people. They have walked away from the standards of their forefather Levi. And God chastened the people for unfaithfulness in marriage, first by marrying foreign wives, or second by divorcing the wives to whom they had joined themselves in covenant. And they are warned that God's purifying messenger will come, and he will refine them by fire, like gold and silver being purified. And then God rebukes them for robbing God by withholding tithes. And this is another example of dishonoring God by withholding their best. And finally, they're warned that God's day is coming, which will be preceded by a prophet like Elijah. And now let's examine the content by looking at some key verses. First is chapter 1, verses 8 through 11. And it says, "When you bring blind animals for sacrifice, is that not wrong? When you sacrifice crippled or diseased animals, is that not wrong? Try offering them to your governor. Would he be pleased with you? Would he accept you?" says the Lord Almighty. "Now, implore God to be gracious to us. With such offerings from your hands, will he accept you?" says the Lord Almighty. "Oh, that one of you would shut the temple doors so that you would not light useless fires on my altar. I am not pleased with you," says the Lord Almighty, "and I will accept no offerings from your hands. My name will be great among the nations from the rising to the setting of the sun. In every place, incense of pure offerings will be brought to my name, because my name will be great among the nations," says the Lord Almighty. In this passage, God rebukes the people for offering second-class offerings that were damaged or blemished. To give God second best is to say, in essence, that God is worthy of second best, which is to say that God is second best, which is absolutely not true. God deserves our best because He is best. His name will be great in all the earth because He is great. And it's offensive to him when his people think and act in a way that makes him seem like he is not great. And next is chapter 2, verse 17. And it says, "You have wearied the Lord with your words. How have we wearied him, you ask? By saying, all who do evil are good in the eyes of the Lord, and he is pleased with them. Or, where is the God of justice?" Now, in this passage, the Lord rebukes the people for turning his standards on their head. For they say that the evildoers prosper and that God does not carry out justice. They're making Job's mistake of thinking because the wicked are not immediately punished that they never will be. And they think that God has forgotten justice. And God responds to this accusation in the next key verse, which is chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. And it says, "See, I will send my messenger who will prepare the way before me. Then suddenly the Lord you are seeking will come to his temple. The messenger of the covenant whom you desire will come, says the Lord Almighty. But who can endure the day of his coming? Who can stand when he appears? For he will be like a refiner's fire or a launderer's soap. He will sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. He will purify the Levites and refine them like gold and silver. Then the Lord will have men who will bring offerings in righteousness. And the offerings of Judah and Jerusalem will be acceptable to the Lord, as in days gone by, as in former years. So I will come near to you for judgment. I will be quick to testify against sorcerers, adulterers, and perjurers, against those who defraud laborers of their wages, who oppress the widows and the fatherless, and deprive aliens of justice, but do not fear me, says the Lord Almighty. I, the Lord, do not change. So you, O descendants of Jacob, are not destroyed." Now, in this passage, we see God will send his messenger to be a refiner's fire, a purifying agent of God's justice. God will bring justice and righteousness to his people. And therefore, his people should be prepared and change their lifestyle in anticipation of the Lord's coming. God does not change. And this means both justice and salvation. And then finally is chapter 4. Verses 5 and 6. "See, I will send you the prophet Elijah before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers, or else I will come and strike the land with a curse." Now, this passage is a promise at the end of Malachi that God would send a prophet like Elijah before the day of the Lord in order to prepare the people. Now, in the New Testament, Jesus says that this promise was fulfilled by John the Baptist, who was sent to prepare the way for Jesus. These then are some of the main ideas from the book of Malachi. So now, let's look at the theological themes. The first theme is, give God your best. As we've already seen, God deserves the best because he is God. And to give him a half-hearted or blemished service and offering is an insult to who he is. It's saying that we value something else more than God, which means not only that we're an idolater, but also that our ability to discern what is fully valuable is horribly twisted and broken. We should give God our best, not just because it came from him, but because he is better than anything else. And that leads us to the second theme, which is covenant faithfulness. Malachi calls the people back to faithfulness to God's covenant relationship. They were breaking a variety of the covenant stipulations because in their hearts, they had already forsaken the covenant. They didn't do the things that God asked because they'd ceased to care about God in the manner that they should. And they need to return to God and then faithfulness to his covenant and stipulations. And then the third theme is the reason that stands behind the first two themes. And this is that the Lord is great and his name is great. Now, a few key places in this book, God reminds his people that he is great over all the nations, and his name will be great in all the earth. They will know that he is Yahweh. This is to correct their perspective of what is truly real and valuable, and to help them conform their affections and their lifestyle to the appropriate response to his greatness and his covenant. Okay, so now let's review. First, we'll review the organization of Malachi. And all I'm requiring you to memorize is that Malachi is a series of disputations. And now let's review the themes of Malachi. And they are: give God your best, covenant faithfulness, and Yahweh is great. And now, because Malachi is the last of the minor prophets, we'll play the game of guess the one-word summaries for all of the minor prophetic books. Feel free to keep score at home, and remember, the one with the most points is the winner. Okay, the first book is Hosea, and I've chosen the word adultery, because God uses the literal adultery in Hosea's family to teach a lesson about the spiritual adultery of Israel. And then the next book is Joel. And I've chosen the word locust, because in Joel, the locust plague is the major event that God uses to teach his people about the greater coming judgment and rescue that follows. And the idea of a locust plague is unique to Joel, so that'll help you remember. And next is the book of Amos. Now, there are a number of good possibilities to choose for this book, but I chose the word justice. Because in Amos, a big part of the book is God calling his people to exercise justice with one another as an outworking of their righteous relationship with him. And the next is the book of Obadiah. And I've chosen the word Edom, because Obadiah is a message of judgment specifically aimed at the nation of Edom. And then is the book of Jonah. And no, I didn't choose the word whale, because Jonah is so much more than just Jonah's ride in a big fish. I've chosen the word missionary, because this story highlights God's missionary heart by rebuking Jonah for not sharing God's mission to make his name known to the nations, even to the enemy nations. And then is the book of Micah. And the one-word summary for this book is lawsuit, because Micah's oracles are in the form of a covenant lawsuit, as we saw when we studied that book. Then is the book of Nahum, and I chose the word Nineveh, obviously because Nahum is a message of judgment specifically against Nineveh. And next is the book of Habakkuk. Now, there are a few good possibilities for this book, but I chose the word trust, because the message of Habakkuk is that God's people need to trust him, even in crazy, overwhelming circumstances, when it seems like God is allowing injustice. And then is the book of Zephaniah. And this is a tough one. Now, whenever I kind of play this game in a classroom setting and have students guess, some student will eventually guess Day of the Lord, because that is the main theme, the main idea and message of the book of Zephaniah. And, however, obviously that's more than one word. So I have gone with the word Day of the Lord. Okay, I cheated. But hopefully this will help you remember the main idea of the book of Zephaniah. And then is the book of Haggai. Now, the word temple is a good possibility, but I've chosen the word priorities because this seems to be the immediate message to God's people, to put him first. And then is the book of Zechariah. And I chose the word Messiah because all of Zechariah is looking forward to the restoring of God's kingly rule, and it centers around the Davidic king, the Messiah. And many of the verses of Zechariah are quoted in the New Testament as being fulfilled by the Messiah, Jesus. And then finally is the book of Malachi. And I've chosen the word disputations because Malachi is a series of disputations where God corrects his people and calls them back to faithfulness. Wow, well, we made it. This is the last of the minor prophets, and it's the last book of the Old Testament. However, this is not the last section of this course. In the next section, we'll try to wrap up the content, meaning, and message of the Old Testament by looking at how it connects with the New Testament. So I'll see you there. Thanks for watching.